until now. So we looked at strings moving in flat space, and we decided we needed 26 flat space directions in order to have a while invariant Wachi theory and have a nice BRST in an S-structure which would work. Now, if you recall expressions like the BRST charge, only really dependent on the stress tensor of your theory, or the theory that describes the motion in space-time. And the fact that this is nilpotent really depends only on the fact that this stress tensor has the correct central charge, which in tensor for PE would be a statement that here there is something like 13. I think this is 0.5/2. Anyway. Okay. Now, you see the whole structure would still work if we replace some part of our flat space time, some part of our matter theory with something else. In showing that this squares to zero and is nice, I never use the fact that this T has the specific form of del x mu del x mu. I could have done other things. I could have said, okay, let me take an action of a bunch of bosons. And added other stuff to the action. Some other conformal field theory with central charge. Which makes up for the central charge that is missing here. So the stress tensor would have been something like the stress tensor of the scalar fields plus some other contribution from these other degrees of freedom than leaving unspecified. The whole structure would have worked. Now, for example, suppose that this quantum field theory has some spectrum of some Hilbert space of states on the circle with a spectrum which is discrete. L0 or the state I being some number. And L0 bar being some other number. Then we could have done the same analysis we did before. We could have looked for the string spectrum, right? We said, okay, we can make up states, say, of this form. P for the scalar fields times some guy from this extra quantum field theory times the Gauss ground state. I would have said, okay, well, I need P squared to be 2 minus EI. Perhaps I also need EI to be EI bar. So that both L0 is equal to 1 and L0 bar is equal to 1. Sorry, I'm polymorphing this. This would have given me a good BRST state. I could have said, okay, let me look for states of this form. Okay, and I would have said, okay, I can find states like that if P squared is minus EI and I don't know, EI plus 1 is equal to EI bar, etc. I could have built a Hosting spectrum and I would have found a bunch of particles move, you know, with some moment, with some on-shell condition in this d-dimensional space-time. Some tower, infinite tower of particles whose specific properties will depend on the spectrum of my theory. Among those particles, I would have always found the, unfortunately, silly tachyon. That's unavoidable. I would have found gravitons. Just using the vacuum of these extra degrees of freedom on the worksheet. And other stuff. So, as long as you're only looking at the massless stuff, right, you would have seen just a theory of gravity with a tachyon in here, maybe. It depend, the precise details will depend on the spectrum of this quantum field theory. You might wonder what are the possible spectra of a quantum field theory with a given central charge. This is a very interesting question, which is actually not not something we can still fully understand, but there are bounds. There are bounds. So using the bootstrap, one can show that the energy of the first state cannot be arbitrarily higher than the ground state, for example. One can try to put very concrete bounds, which will give you some information about the possible spectrum. And we'll see some example later in the lecture. But it's just to say that you can have many more things than just a string moving in 26 directions. Of course, they all make no sense. All make no sense for the bosonic string because of the tachyon. But so roughly speaking, the space of possible choices is, I should say CFT, is connected to the space of possible conformal field theories. Again, we don't quite know what the space of all possible two-dimensional conformal field theories is. But each of these would, in principle, give you a valid perturbative bosonic string. As far as I know, as long as the dimension is greater or equal to 2, the spectrum, I think the so-called the no-Gauss theorem would still hold, and the spectrum of string states would be unitary and nice and behave well. If you try to mix up time with the rest of the CFT, things get a bit more complicated because you need to make sure that you still have something like a time direction which provides null states which can be canceled out in some appropriate pattern. And actually, I don't think anybody knows how things would work precisely. Meaning that I don't think people know examples but there is a good no-Gauss theorem. But it's mostly because we do not know much about the space of conformal field theories. Already for unitary conformal field theories, for unitary conformal field theories, at least we can put bounds using bootstrap techniques. If you put in the time direction, two things become non-unitary, and we really know very little. But, okay, so today I would like to explore some of these possibilities. You know, some of the ways we can replace flat space with something else. And I want to give two examples which sort of stress two different aspects of this. So one thing you can take is, say, I want to take a space-time which is still kind of flat with some wiggles. Okay, try to see what happens locally when I try to change my space, my flat space-time into something else. And then in the second half of the lecture, maybe partly tomorrow, I will explore what happens if the space-time is globally not flat. Questions?
Yeah, just what precisely do you mean kind of flat with the wiggles?
I mean that it's still topologically, say, a flat space, and there is a metric which is close to being flat in the sense that the curvature is bounded by some scale. So the curvature never gets bigger than some fixed amount.
What, why do you think, like, the geometry will be related to this you're talking about, or where
to go? No, no, a change in geometry is an example of this.
Let me
explain.
Okay.
So, suppose I want to study strings moving some manifold, Riemannian manifold. Then, at the very least, I would say, okay, let me take this action. Now I don't have the flat metric anymore to contract mu and nu. I can put the g mu nu, which is a function of x, right, as an action. This is not a free theory anymore. These are not free scalars because the action is not quadratic. This is some other quantum field theory. If I do things properly, I might be able to make it into a conformal field theory, make it while invariant, and fit it into that recipe. Maybe even just replace completely the 26 directions with something like this. Okay? Now, when I say, in order to put some order in this calculation, because we don't really know how to deal with quantum field theories, even in two dimensions, when they're just generic, we need to set up some kind of a perturbation theory. If the theory is not free. So in this particular example, I might say, okay, suppose that I start with a flat metric. And then I start adding terms of higher and higher order in X. Okay, this will be a setup where I know how to do things because I can do perturbation theory. So I can look at this as a perturbative quantum field theory with a bunch of interactions, which are the coefficients in front of these terms. The only slightly unusual thing is that because x is dimension zero, I can write an infinite sequence of terms, which are normalizable. The way to think about it is the whole metric is a potentially renormalizable deformation. When you study the renormalization of this theory, you need to renormalize all the couplings. So you have a beta function for each, an infinite tower of beta functions, one for each of these couplings. Alternatively, you have a beta functional, which describes how the whole metric evolves. This beta function will be computed by pretty standard diagrams in this quantum field theory, right? If you want to study, I don't know, the change in this coefficient, you are going to look at some diagrams like these and look for divergences, look for logarithmic divergences, and so on and so forth. Actually, even this, of course, will evolve, potentially evolve anyway. So, within this perturbative expansion, the leading order beta function as I mentioned yesterday, kind of looks like this. Now, it looks like magic that the Einstein tensor would emerge here, but it's not as much surprising in the sense that if you set your perturbative expansions properly, you have the film of Fermi invariance. And then this is pretty much the only thing you could find. Now, the textbook way to compute this is to pick what are called Riemann normal coordinates, which make this term disappear and make this term proportional to the Ricci tensor, to the Riemann tensor. And then you compute some very simple diagram like this with the Riemann tensor inserted, and out comes the Ricci tensor. Not so surprising, perhaps, right? Because there is an X mu going in the loop, so you're taking some trace. Of course, when you do things properly, you will also get automatically generate terms that are that have no derivatives. Okay. And so when you start doing your normalization properly, you have to also include terms like this. For example, this would be a tachyon, a wave for the tachyon. So roughly to recognize which, well, okay. In the sense that if you imagine turning on this infinitesimally, you will be adding to the action something like e to the I px, which is some f of p, if you Fourier transform it. And then these are just the vertex operators of the tachyon. Okay, so in principle, you had to write beta functions, you know, that you had to add terms that depend on the tachyon, right? And you get some beta function for the tachyon. And then you can keep trying to add interesting terms. For example, there was nothing forcing this to be really symmetric. There is a nice other term that can be added. Where this is asymmetric, anti-symmetric. This is the B field. Now, if you remember, the massless spectrum of the strain theory consisted of B field, graviton, and dilaton. The dilaton kind of hides himself, essentially because when you have a theory with a graviton and a dilaton and a scalar field, you can always redefine your metric by an overall scale compared proportional to the dilaton, and this has a way to make to push the dilaton around when you concretely what happens is that you can see the dilaton well only if you really include your worksheet metric. It's a bit of a long and unpleasant story, but roughly there is a term that is proportional to the curvature of the worksheet metric times the some term that looks like this, which appears when you do the normalization on a general Riemann surface. And if you think about what's the effect of this, for example, when the dilaton is constant, you're integrating the curvature of the whole surface, and the integral of the curvature over a surface is something like 2 plus n minus 2g. It gives the. So you discover that turning on a wave for the dilaton really redefines the G string. So the dilaton kind of behaves like a position dependent value of the strain coupling constant. Anyway, yeah, I'm trying to remember if it's minus or plus n. I think it's minus n, plus 2 minus n minus 2g. For example, if I look at a worksheet like this, has negative curvature, minus 1 in a proper normalization. You can sort of see that. OK, sorry. What I'm trying to say is that if you set up this problem correctly, you're going to add in as many couplings as you like. And then at least the ones that correspond to massless and tachyonic modes of the string. And then you can write the beta functions for all of these fields. Now, there is a general fact about beta functions in two-dimensional quantum field theories, which they tend to be gradients of some function, of some functional. So in general, whatever you find order by order in the perturbative expansion here can be written as del over del g of some big function of g, b, phi, t. So if you think about the condition, as I said, in order for the string theory to make sense, the theory has to be conformal invariant, particularly conformal invariant. So in order for the theory to make sense, these couplings have to be such that the right-hand side of these equations vanish. If you start from a place where they don't vanish and you're lucky, the RG flow will bring you to a place where they vanish anyway, because quantum field theories tend to flow to conformal field theories, but usually you need to at least tune something, right? When particular relevant parameters typically need to be tuned. This particular setup, that means that if you didn't have the tachyon, you would be pretty happy. But tachyon captures all the relevant parameters, so it means that to get to a solution by RG flow, you had to tune by hand the tachyon to essentially turn it off, order by order in perturbation theory. Mm-hmm.
Are there any theories that would not flow to conformal field theories, no matter how I try to tune
them? Oh, sure. I mean, all of this is perturbative. Again, the RG flow of non-supersymmetric quantum field theories is something that we don't have much control on. But anyway, for describing the string theory, you really need to sit on a CFT. There are some vague ways in which you can try to convert an RG flow into time evolution, but I don't think there is anything precise about that. So anyway, so the way you can think about these equations is the statement that the fields in your the couplings in your Lagrangian has to satisfy a bunch of equations of motion that follow from some effective action. So this function here is identified with effective action, low energy effective action for the string theory, because it gives you the equations of motion that classically are the background of the graviton B field and all of the other fields should satisfy. So in at the leading order, if you ignore the tachyon, which the action looks like this. Plus order of alpha prime. So you see, essentially, this gravity, this h is just a field strength for the B field, something like dB squared. So graphically, you have a theory of gravity plus dilaton plus B field. You might be annoyed by having this e to the phi here, but it's always, as I've mentioned, it's always possible to refine your G like this to move factors of e to the phi around. This particular form corresponds to the convention where there is no dilaton in front of the string theory worksheet action. It's called the string frame for the metric. So you look at the metric as it's felt by the string. But then it has this funny factor of the dilaton. Another way to understand this factor of the dilaton is that really in front of the action, you should put 1 over g string squared. And the natural combination, it's always natural to combine the dilaton with g string. But you can go to what's called the Einstein frame, where you shift when you do a redefinition of this sort, and this disappears, and things get reorganized a little. So when you hear about string frame or Einstein frame metrics, they're just different conventions on how to think about the metric. The string frame metric is the one that appears naturally there. The Einstein frame metric is the one for which the action is the usual Einstein-Hilbert action. Okay, so this part of the lecture has to do with small fluctuations around space-time. Okay, and you find that the string theory is well-defined as long as these small fluctuations satisfy some equations of motion controlled by some effective action. Now, the opposite extreme is, as I was saying, to try to go to some place where we don't have to do this perturbative expansion, where the space-time has structure all the way down to the string scale. But in order to do that, we need to find some situation where we can actually still do calculations. So paradoxically, we want our space-time to be both flat and to have structure on some small scales. Well, there is a way to do that, which is to compactify your space-time. So instead of R26 or 25,1, I'm going to consider a space-time which looks like flat in 25 directions, and a circle in another direction. What's called a Kaluza-Klein compactification takes space-time to include a circle. So now I have 25 scalars which behave as usual. And one special scalar with a property that y plus 2 pi r is identified with y. Any questions? I mean, I don't know, this might be the first time you see a scalar field theory whose target space is not a line. But these things can happen in a lot of situations. For example, suppose you have a standard scale, a standard quantum field theory with 2 scalars and a Mexican hat potential. Right? Then at low energy, you're going to just explore the bottom of this or the Mexican hat, and your scalar field will value on a circle. So there are many ways to make sense of a circle value theory. The main consequence of this statement is that when you study the space of states on a circle, well, there are 2 consequences. consequence. First of all, the zero model of the scalar lives on the circle, so the momentum is quantized. At least the momentum for this direction y. But also, we get new sectors in the Hilbert space, because now you can have situations where the field doesn't go back to itself, but it goes back to itself only up to a shift. Right? For example, now the path integral will have to include configurations where the field starts from zero and goes up all the way to 2 pi r as I go around the circle. So we have twisted sectors. Where y at sigma plus 2 pi equals to y at sigma plus 2 pi r times an integer. We'll compute their energy. But yes, they have energy because the field is not constant. So I want to leave this on the board. We can do the usual mode expansion. There is just one extra term that allows us to have these twisted sectors. So now this is an integer, and this is an integer. The usual stuff. Now, if you look at the y and the bar y, and you look at the Fourier mode expansion, remember, before we had a 0 and a 0 bar with both coincided with momentum, but now they're a little bit more interesting because they receive a contribution from the winding. So you see that now, as you were saying, L0 and L0 bar receive a contribution also from the winding. It's important to note that the energy, which is L0 plus L0 bar, will have some generic form. But the difference between a zero and a zero bar, which is the linear momentum, the momentum along the circle, is an integer. And I want to do this right. When I square these, I'm going to get nw. Okay, so it's going to be nw minus nw. So a zero and a zero bar are not necessarily the same. Which has some interesting effects. Okay. And then, so now we have states labeled by N and W, states for the Y scalar, and of course the usual things obtained from them by acting with bosonic oscillators for Y. So how does the spectrum look like? Let's start from our standard states. Now, for the winding modes of the Taakian, right? So now we want both L0 and L0 bar to equal to 1. They must be the same. So this must be 0. So there are two possibilities. Either the winding is 0, and we end up with what are essentially Kaluza-Klein modes for a Taakian. So moment states for a Taakian with quantized momentum along the circle. Pretty familiar. Or the momentum along the circle is 0, and we get a new set of states. Now, if the radius is very large, you see that these Kaluza-Klein modes are very close to the original modes of the Taakian, just that one of the moments has been discretized. And these modes are going to have very, very high energy. But as the radius is made smaller and smaller, at some point, so the Kaluza-Klein modes go up, right? This is something that whenever I have a quantum field theory and I compactify in a circle and I make the circle small, the Kaluza-Klein modes go up in energy and my theory essentially becomes a theory in one dimension lower. But for the string theory, something different is happening, because as the Kaluza-Klein momentum modes go up in the spectrum, the winding modes come down. If the radius is very, very small, you almost get a continuum of new winding modes. And if you stare at these equations, they don't look that different. So the winding modes look very similar to Kaluza-Klein modes, but for a circle of inverse radius. See, somehow string theory needs to move in 26 directions. If you try to make one very small to make it go away, something else has to come out, because it has to keep moving roughly in 26 directions. Now, we could keep going and try to discover other aspects of the spectrum, right? For example, you would have states of this form now. Because of these, that means that now you need n times w equal to 1. So right, this will give you some interesting states, which are actually massless. Now, if you, okay, there are perhaps unusual. Actually, I'm not sure they're massless. I think I might have got this wrong. Sorry, this would have been massless in a different situation. Now, I take n equal 1, w equal to 1, sorry. I should have said is that they have b squared equal to 2 minus r plus 1 over r squared. Okay, so there are some other massive states. Okay, so you can build up your whole spectrum. You'll find again that if you look at a minus 1, a minus 1 bar, you can have states which have zero winding, or you can have states which have zero.
How did we get to the value of p squared?
So I was just setting L0 equal to 1. So I was using this equation a bit too fast. But I don't really care about the whole rest of the spectrum. What I want to indicate is roughly as the Kaluza-Klein modes are going up in the spectrum, some new winding modes are coming down in the spectrum, which look very similar. Now, the resemblance can be made sharp by the following observation. If you take these degrees of freedom, you can reorganize them. You can write a new field when you sort of switch the sign of all the anti-holomorphic modes and introduce a new zero mode, sort of dual to the winding instead of dual to the momentum. This field behaves like a scalar with periodicity 1 over r. Probably 1 over or 2 over r, sorry. Okay. So this is called T-duality. The string theory on a spacetime with a circle of radius r is completely identical to the string theory on a space with a circle of radius 2 over r. The whole spectrum is indistinguishable, all the interactions are indistinguishable, it's really the same theory. This general phenomenon persists even for situations which are less nice and flat than this. T-dualities have all sorts of generalizations. The general flavor is that you take a conformal field theory which describes somehow a big compact space, you start making this compact space smaller and smaller while preserving the equations of motion, while keeping that as CFT. At some point, the CFT, you know, the description as a CFT, as a quantum field theory with a target, which is some manifold, gets lost. You keep moving in the parameter space. By the time, at some point, you might recover the description, but on a completely different space. So the space of configurations for string theory may be not geometric. So if you think about the general space of configurations that the string theory can explore, you know, string backgrounds, it will have many connected patches. And it's perfectly possible for a single connected patch to contain parts which look like different spacetimes, even different topology, completely different. So when you move, start from something that looks like a big spacetime, you make some direction small, new winding modes come down, you get to a situation where you have closer climb modes and winding modes more or less coexisting. So there is no good geometric description of what's going on. And then maybe you can find a new direction where some of the closer climb modes go away and the winding modes come down, and you're building up a new space-time. So there is sort of a notion of stringy geometry, which is the geometry seen by string perturbation theory, which is some kind of generalization of the standard geometry. Now, all of this is just...
How are those patches with each other?
They're sort of continuous deformations. Okay. There are some, there's a continuous process, possibly dynamical, so it's perfectly possible for your dynamic to explore the whole space. Right then. Yeah. So all of this is just three-level in string theory. So it's sort of non-perturbative on the world, from the point of view of the worksheet theory. But we are just studying the condition for the three-level for the string theory to satisfy its classical equation of motions. Now on top of that, there is the whole question of what happens quantum mechanically in string theory. So what how is this picture changed by the loops of string theory? Of course, those questions are really hard to discuss in bosonic string because quantum mechanical bosonic string just decays. The tachyon does something that we don't understand and the theory goes away. But still, right, so until now, all our discussion has been about defining string perturbation theory and trying to see some interesting phenomena which are essentially happening at the tree level in string theory. Now, so T-duality is one of the nicest. There are other dualities which are similar to T-duality. Now, of course, it would be much better if you could make statements which are not perturbative in the string coupling, string theory. But as I mentioned, we don't have a non-perturbative definition of string theory. Instead, we are going to describe in the next lecture something called D-brains, which is some modification of the perturbative string theory, which somehow teaches us non-perturbative information. Now, I don't know if it's worth to start saying a couple words about that, but first I'd like to make sure that there are no more questions about today's material. I mean, this can be a bit unfamiliar the first time you see it, but at the end, it's just a statement about two-dimensional conformal field theory. It's a statement you can find in Di Francesco, say, that a free scalar field theory valued in a circle is invariant under this change of the radius of the circle. So it's just a statement that the space of conformal field theories is not quite this, is a little bit smaller than the space of possible definitions of a conformal field theory. It's perfectly possible to start with different definitions of a quantum field theory and land in the same space, in the same place. So all these perturbative dualities are really statements about two-dimensional RG flow or two-dimensional quantum field theory, right? Different ways of defining a quantum field theory in two dimensions might coincide secretly. Or might be connected in a ways that you wouldn't expect as you pass through strong coupling on the worksheet. And also perhaps this, you know, is also the first example of the sort of phenomenon I was describing, that somehow string theory augments or modifies quantum gravity, contains quantum gravity, and it starts modifying it at a scale, which is the string scale, which is much, much potentially lower than the Planck scale. So here, the very notion of geometry goes bonkers when the radius is order one. Now, what does one mean, really? It really meant one string length. So the radius really is dimensionful. What I'm calling R here should really be something like R L string. Well, a string is this sort of basic string length which appears in front of the action. So there we call. So in terms of this alpha prime, which introduced here, something like alpha prime is L string minus 2, or something like that. So anyway, so L string sets the scale of string phenomena. You know, when we say that the mass of the tachyon is 2, we really mean 2 L string to the minus 2, and so on. And so here is one example of how, you know, gravity or geometry break down at this scale. Right, if I can give a little anticipation to
can
yes.
I just ask, so there was a connection between this radius and the tension of the string?
Right, sorry. The tension is something that goes like 1 over length squared,
yeah, so
I think.
I'm just trying to understand how that exactly connected to the geometry
that's right. So there's this just this general scale that tells you how what the tension of the string is, what the energy of the tower of modes that come from quantizing a string, and so on and so forth. Right. Perhaps something I can say is that, right, so a particular consequence of this sort of new production of geometry is that very often if you put your string on a space-time and then you try to make the space-time singular, some duality like that cures the singularity by changing the geometry there. That doesn't happen always, though. So there are some situations where the space-time becoming singular would seem to create a singularity in the theory. And the D-brains that we're going to introduce tomorrow are the way that kind of... So there are possible divergences of problems that cure non-perturbatively, not perturbatively, and will be cured by the brains. Anyway, so I don't want to introduce the brains yet, but I want to give you a very short story about quantum field theory, which is useful to introduce the brains. So suppose you're studying QED. So a theory of photons and electrons. So you have some action, you know, for the photon, the electron, okay, some interaction. And now, suppose that you want to study the behavior of electrons near a proton. Now, of course, one thing you could do is to add, so here there's some mass of electrons. You could add the field of the proton to this Lagrangian. But if you're working at energies which are much smaller than the mass of the proton, you don't expect a process which creates a proton or destroys a proton. So using the whole quantum field theory of a proton seems to be a big overkill. We should be able to just describe the way the electrons interact with one big, heavy proton sitting somewhere in space and moving along time. So the way you would do that is to add a term to the Lagrangian, which describes processes where the proton emits a photon. So you're just going to add these big interaction vertices which only live on the proton. So the way to do that is essentially to add an integral on the line, on the work line of the proton, or something like A mu x mu dot. If you add this term to this Lagrangian, this introduces new processes so the electron might exchange photons with this proton which is sitting there. Okay. If the proton is infinitely massive, right, this is an exact description. The proton will not recoil. Of course, when you do this calculation, you might have to do a bit of renormalization, right, to make sure that all the couplings are fine. Maybe if you want to describe this effect like the proton is not point-like, you might introduce extra couplings to describe the radius of the proton, the dipole moment, whatever. But all of these will look like specific sources to the action. So something like this is called the source. So new interaction terms that just live in some location. And the simple sources are linear in the fields. Okay. So in a similar way, you might ask what happens in string theory if I try to add sources. If I try to add some phenomena, some processes which create strings from some at some location of space-time. So this is what introducing D-brains mean. Now, the magic of the same phenomena which made the graviton, which made the metric dynamical, will also make other things dynamical. So here, you can pick your position of the proton, you can make it move however you want, nothing will go wrong. In string theory, the way the source moves will also have to satisfy equations of motion. And so these sources will automatically become dynamical.
But where do the D-brains come into that? Because you can just replace the word line with the world sheet.
So the analogy in string theory will be there will be some object which can create word sheets. This object could be a line, could be a plane, could be a point in principle. That's the location of space-time where some source exists. And just you know, so that will be the object. You know, try to add sources to string theory. Okay.